All right, let's get going here. We have a whole lot of Marquette topics to get to after the cornucopia of basketball content.
Thanksgiving reference.
Another good word. Just right
Thanksgiving
off the bat.
Reference.
It was a Thanksgiving pun, too. It was, that's intentional.
Yeah, I never hear that word.
Pat's been thinking about this for at least 3.5 days.
No, dude. straight up improv that. And honestly, I don't think I've ever received such unanimous approval from you guys for any of my wordplay. So it's deeply appreciated.
This podcast exists to lift each other up.
Yeah, that's definitely how it always plays out, with the zero exceptions. welcome to another episode of the Anonymous Eagle Podcast with Sam and Ben. I'm Patrick. Marquette just wrapped a 2-1 week at the Orlando Invitational, the formerly sponsored by a pyramid scheme, Orlando Invitational. It was generally positive.
It's about what you could have asked for. I mean, obviously we were riding high after, you know, going 2-0 to start, and sort of got brought back down to earth. But if you would have told me before this tournament that we'd look that convincing and then just run into a top five buzzsaw, I would have believed you. So, like,
I think it'd be a good way to start off that conversation. We should go around and say, on a scale from 1 to 10, how do we feel about the weekend?
Like 10 being good, like, I feel really, really good, or 10, like,
yeah,
oh my god.
10 being national title contenders.
Okay. Yeah. Ten being good.
Yeah, 10 being good. Yes. I'm at like a. I'm gonna be that guy. I'm at like a 7, maybe 7.25.
Okay.
I mean, yeah, Davidson struggled to start the year, but that's still a very good mid-major team going to compete. Although Dayton, you know, looks like the team to beat in the A-10. That's still a conference with Davidson, VCU. Amongst others that are going to be very good. And then, you know, absolutely, yeah, it takes Herculean effort from Marcus Howard, but absolutely blowing a USC team with a bunch of ridiculous athletes and future NBA prospects. You know, we can debate how good Andy Enfield is at his job, and, you know, just how good that team really is as a team. But we beat a lot of very good players in USC, and not just, you know, eked out a victory, like, prove that we can compete with teams that, you know, at least maybe not according to KenPom, but the eye test sort of look on our level. So, or, you know, to maybe the general public, yeah, USC should be as good as Marquette this year, you know, quote unquote, like, to come away with two very good wins, and, yeah, shellacking at the hands of a top five team. I have no complaints about that. Not every team is going to be the combination of ridiculous athletic perimeter defenders that Maryland could throw at Marcus Howard, and also the offensive skill of Maryland. It was just a perfect storm of ways we could get beat, and we did. I what can you do? It is what it is. That was actually the only loss I predicted in the non-conference, so I saw it coming, quote unquote.
Thank you for your service.
Pat, what about you?
I'm a 6, and I would be, and there was such a good opportunity there for, but enough, but also let me get on to my Marquette assessment.
Nice.
There was such a good opportunity. I'm kind of disappointed you guys didn't.
Yeah. You know what? I like it. I like it.
I don't know. I'd be lower, honestly, too, if it wasn't for how well Brenda Bailey played on Sunday. And I'll let you handle that in your section of joyous outburst, Ben.
Thank you.
Yeah, I don't know. I think this is kind of how this team is and has been. And I guess 5 years in, sort of expecting it to be any different is not really reasonable. This team is very talented, has a lot of offensive ability, and does not beat high major teams that are better coached than it in a lot of in most circumstances. And I think it really boils down to, does the other team have a game plan for how to defend Marcus Howard? If the answer is yes, the winning percentage goes down considerably. And USC, I would say, is coached by one of the, you know, I've been speculating about this, but I don't know how many, you know, what are there? If you count the Big East as a high major conference, which you should in basketball, there's about 70 high major coaches.
Go higher than that because people will insist you include the AAC.
I will not do that. And those
people you can include the top half of the AAC.
No, I will not do any of the AAC. The AAC is terrible and does not deserve to be treated.
Wichita State is a high major team.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. But no, like in that group of six conferences, Steve Wojciechowski is better than, 15 of those coaches, 20 maybe, if I'm feeling good on a nice day. And Andy Enfield is not one of those coaches that is better than Steve Wojciechowski. And so Marcus Howard is able to score 51 points and Marquette smokes USC start to finish with some legitimately nervy stretches, even though the lead was as high as 30. And so then you get to Maryland and, you know, Mark Turgeon isn't really regarded as amazing coach at high major program with a lot of history, but the adjustment made to defend Marcus Howard was very, very clear and obvious. And it completely took Marquette out of the game. And there needs to be, and you know what? I'm not gonna get overly frustrated about losing to a top five team, but there needs to be a counter plan for teams that are going to try to do that exact same thing in the future. Switching on Marcus Howard as he's running through to try to get space. Because I think, you know, against USC, Marcus was running all over the place. None of the defenders could hang with him by the third screen. And he went and scored 51 points. If teams are going to make that big of an adjustment to take him out of the game, there needs to be a counter adjustment and a counter plan. Because even if Brendan Bailey scores 30 points, which amazing stuff, Marquette cannot win serious basketball games without Marcus Howard at least having a good offensive game. And Marquette's two losses have been games where Howard has been completely taken out of it for large stretches, if not the entire game. So, that's where I'm at. I'm not super optimistic about this team going forward. I'm very happy that they avoided disaster scenario and got at least two reasonably quality wins. Both are KenPom B wins and probably will stay as KenPom B wins. And I'm good with that. I'm not going to be as good with it if they lose to Kansas State on Saturday.
And yeah, Kansas State isn't good.
No.
At all.
But Marquette needs to be prepared to win in a raucous road environment, regardless of whether Kansas State is good. Wisconsin isn't good. Marquette was not prepared to win in a raucous road environment and played terribly. So it's like, if they lose that game, then it's pretty much every opportunity on the non-con has been relatively squandered, besides Purdue. And it's concerning. It'll all come down, and a good Big East season will be required to make the tournament, let alone position themselves for any sort of success. So obviously that's the case regardless, but it just doesn't make you, if they go lose that game and I look at what they've done over the course of the non-conference season, because the rest of the games are pretty negligible, It's pretty much you look at it and you said, okay, how is this team good? And it's Marcus Howard needs to score 40. And if that's going to be the case, then obviously this team is going to be super inconsistent because Marcus Howard's not going to score 40 every game, and the team needs to have an adjustment that it can make to get him open if teams are just keying on him completely.
Yeah, I think I can kind of build off that with, first off, my score from the weekend is a 5.9. The only reason 0.1 was taken off of the 6 was because I had to listen to Dan Dockage just scream in my ear.
True. That's true.
But
and on Twitter later.
Yeah, that was the thing. The Davidson game was pretty close, and Davidson has not been good so far this year, but that they're going to improve, and they're going to get some good wins in a very, very good A-10. So I think that'll end up being a pretty solid win. I see the USC win probably being a little bit worse over the course of the year, but honestly, played good enough to the point that doesn't really matter. They didn't really struggle at all. I don't mind losing to Maryland much at all. Like, hell, they could have lost by, like, they could have been down by, like, 10 to 15 over the course of the entire game. I probably wouldn't have minded that much. It's the fact that they got kicked in the face with that very early initial momentum, and, like, you just kind of see these teams, like, obviously everyone's game plan number 1, 2, 3 is going to be stop Marcus Howard, but teams like Maryland, probably Seton Hall, Villanova, those are the teams that are going to have guys that are going to be able to switch like that and stop him by double teaming and being able to get back on their own guys. Like Aaron Wiggins was just tremendous yesterday. So was what was that guy? Morsell, whatever. Those guys are incredible defenders for that team. And so they were able to switch off effectively and be able to guard their own guys for the most part. The problem was that Wojo essentially has two plans of action for Marcus Howard, which is get the Ojan to get on that high ball screen and see if he can be open for a three, or get him off the ball and run him from one side to the other. And when you're switching guys on those screens, it's hard to get him open on those. But then Wojo just didn't really do much else beyond that. Like, I'm not the coach, I'm not looking at film, but I know that there are more than two ways to get the best score in the country to get the ball. And that was a good portion of the reason why they ended up being doubled up in the first half. And
I just don't get a big game like that. And like, I wonder if they'll take away my best player. If they do that, maybe I'll have a backup plan.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And again, Maryland is very, very good. I came away pretty impressed with them. I'm going to watch them a lot more in the Big Ten this year. And yeah, they did have a lot of momentum. Clearly, like, they were fired up for this game. But to me, if you're trying to get a decently high in the tournament, that should only take a team so far to get a lead on you. Like, that should probably translate to a 10-point margin of victory at halftime, not a 21. And so that kind of dampened things for me. But again, I'm overall optimistic, I guess. I came out of the weekend in a better position than I came into it.
Oh, for sure. I mean, I think there was legitimate concern from us everywhere.
I didn't even talk about Brendan. Sorry. F the haters. Anyone who doubted him, I never doubted him. Not one bit. You do not have to go on my Twitter and look at the times that I might have even mentioned that Brendan Bailey might not be having the greatest start to the year. I never said that. Never. Not once.
Game MVP in a 21-point loss, according to KenPom.
But also, he was, like, legitimately, like, great. Like, that was – it's not, like, grasping at straws. Like, oh, this role player kind of had a good game, you know? Like, maybe something can happen from that. Like, no, he was legitimately amazing. He had the most confidence that I've ever seen from him. He was like pulling up off the dribble. He was doing the Sam Hauser pick and pop. He was like playing great defense. He had that one steal, like very low on the block, just came out of nowhere, stole from Jalen Smith's hand. And so, yeah, like if he can tap into that, like just a little bit more consistently over the course of the year, then my take will be absolutely correct.
A couple of things on Brandon Bailey. First of all, he made 7 3-pointers in that game, which is absolutely amazing.
That's Marcus Howard numbers.
Yeah.
Second thing is he had 25 points in the preceding 6 games and scored 27 on Sunday, which is hilarious to me. What a time to be alive. I think Brandon Bailey, I guess if you want to go positive on the Maryland game, Brandon Bailey and Sakar Anim really did a nice job of offering secondary scoring options in like a really, like they both played really authoritatively on offense. Sakar maybe more in like the second half, but they both were pretty solid second options. I don't think it's
possible. And they needed to be because right. Kobe McEwen kind of played like the guy that worried us a little bit going into the year, like the kind of guy he was at Utah State, just high volume, low efficiency.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's a whole nother conversation, I think, that we'll probably get into. But I just think in general, Marquette's not going to be able to win if Marcus Howard doesn't get he doesn't need to score 40. He doesn't need to score 51, but he can't score 6.
Bold take, Pat. Very bold take.
Yeah, well, I mean, and I think part of the problem is that even though, like, obviously you need your best player to play well to win games, but I think part of the problem is he's still such a he's not a liability on defense. I don't want to call him that because I don't think that accurately reflects his commitment to getting stronger and improving. But he is. But if he's not offering the offensive boost and he's not playing, you know, he's like missing shots and, you know, leading and contributing to empty possessions, and on top of that, not offering much as a defender just by virtue of his size, it's a real problem. It's just, you just have like, and he's a great player that you need to try to get all the opportunities as possible. But when he's having a bad game, you have a really negative player on the court. I think that's part of why so much of what he does offensively is so crucial to victory for Marquette, because he is ultimately such a swing player on either side.
Yeah.
Kobe McEwen.
Tournament to forget.
Yeah, I mean, really just a difficult to explain terrible offensive weekend.
Who's rattling around over there?
Sorry, that's me. I'm getting my Tupperware out.
Wow, that's real behind the scenes.
Ben, fully committed and focused on the podcast.
Hey, boys got to eat.
So I would just say in general, it probably was a weekend to forget for Kobe. I don't really know. It was just really frustrating. And I think he's a player you honestly probably leave on the court to try to get through the offensive struggles. Because I think I saw Alan Bukowski tweeting about how well he was doing as a rebounder.
He was, honestly, yeah.
He was really succeeding in that regard. I would like him to shore up his defensive rotations and just staying in front of guys better, because I think he sort of struggles sometimes to find the right defender or the right offensive player to defend. There are anecdotally a couple of times where I think he struggles with that, but I think his body type could lend to like a good perimeter defender, or at least a consistent one. But I just think he needs to be a second offensive option. I know Marquette kind of had
Sakari and him and Brendan Bailey played well, but it was kind of by necessity. Like, it was desperation that Ben, can you stop with the Tupperware?
Okay, that one was quiet. I was just
it's
chicken in it.
No, it's so loud, dude.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Tupperware.
Turn off a mic or something, my dude.
I'm being careful, I promise.
Okay, anyhow, Kobe McEwen, he needs to probably turn the ball over less, but he really needs to be a secondary offensive option, especially because of stuff like the Purdue game, where the best half of Marquette season was almost essentially, well, okay, the best half of Marquette season was USC. But prior to that, the second best half of Marquette season was basically entirely carried by Kobe McEwen. And so I think having him, he needs to be a secondary offensive option for this team to sort of reach its potential and be able to win games like that Maryland game. And being in a slump really exacerbated the struggles that Marcus Howard was having because there wasn't a second ball handler to pick up the slack offensively.
Yeah, I'm more willing to just kind of, because I think I mentioned this on the Groomy, that if you're in a slump over one of these Thanksgiving tournament games, it's probably going to be a slump for the whole weekend because, you know, it's not like practice time to get over it. So I'm not going to take as much from those three games as I would if those three games were each 4 days apart. And Alan did make a great point. He, like, the effort was there, and that was kind of that was one of my concerns going into the year as well. He, like, was clearly out of it in his second year at Utah State. So, like, the fact that he was showing that willingness to go for those defensive rebounds, and I don't know, I'm not worried about it. It just kind of was. Every college player is going to have a bad game, so I'm not overly concerned.
Yeah, I mean, I think, I don't know. Are you more concerned about Kobe McEwen or Theo John coming out of this weekend?
Honestly, neither.
Okay.
I mean, you know, again, a friend of the pod, Alan Bukowski online, did a really good thread about how inexplicable it was that the bigs at Marquette were struggling like they were on offense, especially because Wojo coached them at Duke, or was apparently the assistant in charge of the bigs at Duke. You know, maybe they're not prototypical, quote-unquote, but even back in the day, there were more traditional bigs that Duke was recruiting. We weren't quite to the style of basketball where it was four out, one in, with a four stretching four. And so it's kind of wild that our bigs are so offensively challenged at times. You know, you can maybe make excuses for the Maryland game because they are going up against a trio of Jalen Smith and the Mitchell twins, who are all very good size-wise defenders. You know, Jalen Smith recorded three blocks. I think all three of them were on Theo, or maybe two on Theo, one on Ed Morrow. But, you know, like the big has never been, you know, with the exception of like Luke Fisher cleaning up really well in the glass, you know, like the post touches Luke Fisher would get on some of those earlier Wojo teams, you know, the big man has never really been an emphasis for the Wojciechowski offense. You know, the foul troubles are the foul troubles. There's not much you can do about that. You know, shout out Jace Johnson for coming in and having a very huge impact. I mean, he had 11 rebounds in the Maryland game, including 5 offensive rebounds, which is incredible.
Round of applause for our boy Jace. Yeah.
Jace was incredible. I mean, he really, like, legitimately offered something that I don't think I've ever seen on a Steve Wojciechowski team. Like, a big man.
He's Dokic's wet dream out there, honestly.
Dokic's best comment of the weekend. I hate to say it, but, like, and honestly, my dad came back and talked to me about it, which dads like Dan Dokic, I feel like, so that's, like, pretty standard. But, like, talking about how he was saying that Jace just likes being a center. And it's just like, yeah, that's, like, honestly the perfect way to say it, because
that's also the only thing he can be.
Yeah, well, but he was just doing all the things that you want from a center who is not going to be a game changer as a scorer. Yeah. He was just doing all the little things, and it was incredible, especially in contrast to Ed Morrow, how well Jace was executing. Just, you know, the things that you need to do to succeed at that position. And, yeah, I mean, I guess we can – we don't need to get too deep into the Ed Morrow.
Staple him to the bench. Done. That's it. That's all I want.
I don't think you need to say too much because I think the issues are pretty freaking glaring. Yeah. But after that game on Sunday, his turnover rate is up to 43.9%.
Holy Christ. What?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's more than 4 out of 10 times he touches the ball, he turns it over. And like, frankly, that I'm not even kidding. I almost physically mean find a way to restrain him to the bench because Jace Johnson gives you a way, way better option at this point, which is something I never thought I'd say coming into the season. But Ed Morrow doesn't know how to keep a pivot foot. Ed Morrow, you know, recorded 3 defensive rebounds, 0 of 1 from the floor, 2 personal fouls, and 3 turnovers. Like, your turnovers can't be tied for your highest stat. That you're not going to play winning basketball if one of your guys is is getting as many turnovers as he has rebounds. Like,
to Tyshawn Taylor. That's a very, very obscure Kansas reference. I'm sorry.
But, like, there's just absolutely no reason for Ed Morrow to see any bulk of minutes, period, at this point. You know, it was even pointed out on Twitter and some of the pre-tournament hype-up videos, you know, last practice before heading to Orlando, he was traveling in practice. Like, what can you do, man? Like, he's a great dude. I'm glad he's on the team, but he's been a liability. And the last thing Marquette needs is a big guy that isn't that big, who was brought in to rebound and isn't rebounding, and who can't stop turning the ball over. The team already struggles with turnovers. Like, you can't just tack on an extra turnover 40% of your possessions while he's out there. That will lead to bad losses.
Yeah, it's honestly more depressing because you can say his name in conjunction with the song Tomorrow from Annie.
Oh, God. No, that was such bad joke.
That's so terrible. Why are you doing this?
Why are you?
My thing about the 43% thing, it should be higher. It's honestly, anytime he gets the ball in the post, you're basically like playing Yahtzee with whether and that's not how you play Yahtzee, so that's a terrible.
Yeah.
You're flipping a coin.
I don't even know how to play Yahtzee.
It's like, will the ref call the travel?
Flip a coin.
It's so unfathomable that this person has been a college basketball player for 5 years. And every time he decides that the possession is going to be used by him, it's just basically a travel roulette. It's so crazy. I do not physically understand how that's possible. And then you tack that on to the plays where he's like, to use a contemporary Yoda or reference here, Baby Yoda reaching for the Mandalorian's arm wound when he tries to, you know, block.
You're spoiling the show.
It really, that is not a spoiler for the show. That's also a meme. But no, he's just out of reach of like every shot he should be at least changing. And it's like, I don't get, and it's crazy because Jace is in there now and Jace is the perfect guy to fill those gaps where he reaches those shots, gets those rebounds, plays under control and within his role. And I don't know. I don't really like, I don't know how you tell a center who seems to be like a really good guy and a leadership type guy that he can't play anymore, but you can't play him. You cannot play him with the level of, commitment to traveling he showed. And I don't, I really don't think there's much of a discussion to have, and I don't want to, I don't like really disparaging players that seem like genuinely good people, but it's just like, I don't know what you do now, because it's just a turnover every time he decides to take the possession. On the flip side, Brendan Bailey has the 200th lowest qualifying turnover rate in Division I basketball. So,
shout out Brendan.
Told you how.
Brendan Bailey, Brendan Bailey Hive, coalesce around your leader, Ben Snyder.
Mm.
So, not to get too off track here, but just like looking at, to reinforce Ben's Brendan Bailey Hive, he had 0 turnovers, 2 steals, and only 1 foul, to 6 total rebounds in addition to his offense against Maryland, which is the best team Marquette will play all season, or at least in the regular season. Like, that's a coming out game, man. If you can do that against every team we play, I mean, obviously the 27 points won't happen every game.
Yes, it will.
Well, okay, so you heard it here first from Ben. Please hold him to his take. But, you know, if he can score 15 a game, shoot 50% from 3 on, you know, obviously less attempts than 12, get 5 rebounds, 2 steals, and an assist to 1 or 2 personal fouls per game, that's winning basketball for Marquette. Because, again, not everybody's going to have the personnel that Maryland had to shut down Marcus Howard. So you got to hope that was the confidence booster he really needed and that it'll persist.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you have Bailey and Annan playing at 75% of what they were in the Maryland game and Marcus Howard playing at, you know, whatever he conventionally contributes, and Kobe McEwen at least has some sort of offensive confidence, you have a really potent offensive attack there. Whether the plans are good enough to make that all happen at the same time is probably worth considering, if that's even possible in this current regime. But I just think in general, Marquette's figuring out the center position. I don't know if you guys sense this at all. I'm sensing that there's a little lack of confidence in Theo John being portrayed by Steve Wojciechowski. I think he's gone away from Theo a lot more, especially over this past week, than we've seen in the past. And if you look at what Theo did against Purdue, when he played 34 minutes and was like a complete X factor, I think this team is ultimately going to be at its best when Theo John is playing 26, 28 minutes. Jace Johnson is playing the, you know, lion's share of the remainder. And so I'm a little frustrated. Obviously a lot of Theo's issues were explainable by fouls and lack of rhythm associated with that. But I really do think that Wojo needs to commit to Theo as the highest upside guy because of what he contributes as a defender. And I guess potentially he does as an offensive player. I think Wojo might have gotten discouraged by the way he wasn't able to finish through Jalen Smith on those first couple of possessions, which, yeah, I mean, frustrating. It's a little weird. Like, the way he, like, approaches the rim on those, it's like he's trying to, like, do a dunk lay-in. He's not really, like, trying to smash a dunk. But he's not really, like, shooting a layup either. He's trying to almost, like, dunk on the backboard where he should put his layup.
To me, it looked like, and I think the very first possession where Jalen Smith just absolutely swatted the ball out of his hands was the perfect representation of that. To me, it looks like he's being told to put the ball literally on the rim, like, balance it on the rim. And, you know, believe it or not, That's not a sound offensive strategy.
Well, it can draw fouls sometimes, but I just think his offensive approach needs to be a little bit more nuanced in those situations. Like, he needs to be able to read what's happening in front of him and calculate the appropriate way to finish, you know, as he's doing that.
And just a, like, a thought that popped into my head just now, it really doesn't look like Marquette has any form of, like, not just post offense. I mean, obviously we're a guard and wing heavy team. You know, we can debate the how good or bad that is and how many touches should be going to the big guys. Obviously, I think we all agree that more should be going through there. But one thing that I think we lack is all three of our big guys really don't even have post moves. Like, Jace is just bigger than everybody and kind of puts it up off the backboard, hoping it goes in. Ed tries to get really fancy and travels. He tries to move too much. And Theo, besides, like, kind of a one-handed hook jumper thing, besides that and actually, like, dunking the ball, doesn't really have a post move. And even they don't, none of them really even have convincing shot fakes. Like, the best shot fakes I see are off of offensive rebounds that Theo will go get. And it's almost just, like, part of the natural, like, I got the offensive rebound, collect and go back up movement instead of, like, a true, like, post shot fake.
I'm going to kind of sort of disagree with you there, because, I mean, Theo John, like, really on the Theo John front, because, like, he was in the top 200 as a 6'9 center freshman last year in two-point percentage. Like, when he gets the ball, like, in he doesn't really need to do much more than dunking. He's one of the five strongest guys in the entire country, pound for pound, probably. Like, Jalen Smith is probably the only guy who can legitimately back him down. So, like, and then he does have that one post move when he needs it. Like, I don't think he needs to develop this incredibly polished post game to be a useful, if not a really good player. He just kind of needs to be stronger than most people without fouling. That's kind of long and short of it for him.
Well, I want to push back on that, but I think I want to explain why I want that to happen. Yeah, so he did lead in percentage. Now, if I'm Googling here really quick, and by Googling, I mean KenPomming.
The Google of college basketball.
So he had 71 makes on 118 attempts, which is very good. Ed Morrow had more attempts and more makes, for a worse percentage, mind you. And, you know, I mean, obviously Marcus Howard took 302 shots. Like, what can you do about that? Joey Hauser took 131 shots. Or that's just two-pointers, I should say. Like, Joey Hauser took more two-pointers than him. Sam Hauser took more two-pointers than him. Sakar Anum took way more two-pointers than him. I'm not going to read too much into his percentage because, like, over the course of, what, 34 games, he took 118 two-point shots and 0 3-pointers. You know, shocker there. So you do some quick math, and that's, what, 2 shots a game, 3 shots a game? So I'm not going to read too much into how efficient or not he was with that. But the reason I think he needs a more polished post game, and the reason I think Marquette's bigs need a more polished post game, is actually because I'm not sure Wojo is capable of teaching that. And that leads to a bigger point where Wojo doesn't run a complex offense. He doesn't, like you guys were talking earlier about, you know, it was sort of just run Marcus along the baseline with a couple screens and hope he gets open. Give him one pick and roll possession and let him hit a jumper off of it. If he gets doubled, hope to God he can pass out of it. There's a lot of very basic fundamentalist, like, offense that happens with Wojo. But there's really not, like, super creative sets or really even an emphasis on, like, doing anything more complex than be better. Obviously, you want to be better, but, like, hope your individual ball handling and screening skills and slashing skills are better than the opposing defense. There's not, like, there was a really good, I forget the account off the top of my head, but there's a really good account that breaks down, like, what Matt Painter runs at Purdue with a bunch of really good motion screens.
Is it Jordan Sperber? Jordan Sperber's offense gifs are awesome.
So watch stuff like that, and, like, you can see how, like, I think both the Crack Sidewalk guys and Paint Touches were harping on, like, if Wojo can implement some of this motion in the offense, you know, Marcus is going to get a ton of open shots. It'll play to the strengths of Bailey and to Sakar and to, you know, like, there was even, I forget who was talking about running, Ben, it may have even been you, running action for, like, Theo John, just, like, going to the rim and lofting it up for an alley-oop. Was that you or no? Stop me.
That was me. And, yeah, it's more about the action itself more than Theo John developing the post-game.
I agree, but, like, we haven't seen any sets that do any of that. You know, I almost, like, I remember one of the first years Wojo was head coach, I was watching from the stands and went, I think I ran that set in middle school. And there's just, you know, there's very basic fundamental offense, which, you know, he's had ridiculous shot makers and guys that can create a lot of spacing and benefit from that spacing, like the Hauser brothers last year, where, you know, you have elite shooters that benefit from that type of floor spacing. But as soon as you don't have that, or at least, you know, it took until Sunday for Brendan to really start feeling that. Like, the offense has been clunky because we don't actually really have much of an offense. And so I'd like to see them develop post moves, not only to distribute the ball out a little bit more, you know, make people respect that threat more, but also it would indicate to me that Wojo is teaching more complex offense, or the staff is teaching more complex and creative and effective offense than just hope to God you play better on that individual possession than your defender.
Well, I think that kind of brings a discussion full circle, because I mean, what I said at the top about where I was feeling is that I just don't think there's enough regular planning displayed that would tell you that this team is going to be able to make adjustments on the fly. And I think you've seen how the team has played in big must-win games when sort of your individual plan or adjustment is so important to the ultimate outcome in sort of a tight window like an NCAA tournament game. I've never been, and I remain not confident in their ability to do that kind of stuff you're talking about, because you're right. Like, the stuff that Jordan Sperber tweets, I sent one to our chat about the Gonzaga motion that they were running. It's really complex stuff, and that stuff exists. But I just don't think, you know, this regime has showed a commitment to that or an interest in that really much at all. I think Sam Hauser, I think there is something there. I mean, like, the dribble handoffs are a part of that. I like that a lot. And, you know, there's been, like, horns action in the past that's been used quite a bit. So I don't think they're completely devoid of it, but I don't think that they'll ever be on the cutting edge of it, which, if you're going to try to be a better team than you are overall, you kind of need some of that. And especially in, you know, big games, one game samples. And I'm not sure that that's ever going to really be a thing with this program.
Yeah. And I mean, like, I'm not out here calling for the heads of staff or anything. It's just,
I don't think we are.
No, but it's just, it doesn't inspire confidence. And when you've already lost what has made your offense elite, I mean, you still return Marcus Howard, but you've lost what made your offense tick in shot makers that just benefit from space that don't need an innovative, more nuanced offense.
Yeah.
You know, it's sort
of
just...
I don't think we're being overly critical at all. I mean...
No, I'm not saying you are. It's just that, like, it's really putting a glaring spotlight on, like, what is he going to do going forward, especially when you lose, you know, the best scorer in Marquette history and potentially, you know, the best scorer in Big East history. Like,
well, I think we're all worried about that.
Yeah. There's the normal fears, but, like, there's a lot to his system offensively. I think defense is another matter, and I'm actually been very, very impressed with this defense. But it gives me some pause, and, you know, at the end of the day, if we're going to win by playing rock fights, that's fine. It's just, you know, you better hope that you don't run into a Maryland who's just that elite offensively, who then, because of your basic offense can shut you down. Like, at some point, you either can't get shut down by that team. You have to have something more complex than whatever we ran, or you have to be able to defend just that much better. And, you know, that probably won't matter. I think we're going to womp on KSU. That's just me.
Maybe I was just going to say, yeah. Speaking of rock fights.
Yeah, that's going to be worse than the Purdue game. But, you know, like, without, like, it won't be a problem again then until Villanova on January 4th or Seton Hall a couple weeks afterwards. You know, but when you run up against an elite offense, you either have to defend that well or hope to God your basic offense can get you over the hump of their defense. And it's kind of like the Ed Morrow travel calls. Sometimes it just feels like a coin flip and it does not inspire confidence.
Yeah. I think we've said enough about,
yeah, we might have gone a little bit in too deep about the three-game tournament from this last week.
Well, yeah, I know your point, but I think we've also just been handed the most sort of in-game fodder we've possibly had so far. So I think it's worth at least a deep examination. But I think you're right to say that, like you mentioned, with the Kobe slump, stuff will not necessarily perpetuate throughout the season that, you know, exists within the 4-day, 3-game vacuum of hanging out in Orlando and, you know, playing in a hotel all week.
I think quickly, though, yeah. Just very, very quickly before we move on to K-State, it just needs to be mentioned again that Marcus Howard, for the third time in his career, scored 50 points in a game.
Yeah, he's pretty good, man.
It's pretty good.
I just feel like
we should quickly end on that play. To emphasize that we are all still feeling optimistic about this team.
Yeah. I think we're all okay with it. I think we're all sort of realizing at the same time that, you know, this team has limitations and right now they're not in a place to overcome them. So do we want to do like maybe like 5 quick minutes on K-State? I do want to talk about Georgetown and Georgetown being a disaster.
I would like to first say regarding the K-State game that I will be going to the game.
Our live reporter on the scene.
Anonymous Eagle hits the road. I will be making the 2-hour drive to the Little Apple if any single Marquette person is even near the Manhattan area. You're not. It's not even worth saying hit me up because there's just no one there. But yeah. I will be there for a team that, this game is just going to be,
it's going to be gross. To watch. It's going to be gross.
Yeah.
So K-State, they've had some roster adjustments and Bruce Weber has essentially responded by saying, we're going to go with an ugly version of Bob Huggins by saying all turnovers all the time. And
yep.
Even when we get those turnovers, we're still not going to score on them. Because
I was
going to
say,
what?
Bob Huggins' teams were so much better on offense than this.
Yeah, no, even in transition, Kansas State is not good. Like, in transition, they're still scoring less than a point per possession, which is just bonkers to think about.
Yeah.
Especially if you're doing it that much. They have Cardia Jara, Xavier Sneed, and McCole Mayween that are basically the three main guys that returned from last year. I kind of like McCole Mayween. He's a pretty skilled big. He's lanky, not that strong. I don't think Theo John will have that much issue with him, but he was probably the only guy that gave Marquette fits last year. Barry Brown is not going to be there to hound on Marcus Howard at the beginning of the game, but they're going to put a lot of pressure on Marcus Howard, and they are still pretty good at defense. So
yeah, I mean, it's an elite defense. I would like to point out that to the people listening, so we reference Ken Pom all the time, you know, at the Magic Numbers website. So what would you guys say is the average offensive rating? It's supposed to be 100, right?
100 is in theory. Literally is 100.
Yeah. So 100 offensive rating, so how effective you're being as an offensive player is the average. Kansas State has one player above average. And it's Mike McGurl, who is taking 11.4% of their shots. But there is exactly one player on that team that is above an average offensive player for D1 basketball. It is going to be a rock fight.
First one to, 43 wins.
Yeah, if we score 50, we're probably going to win this basketball game.
And we're going to be... My dad and I are going to be driving during the KU game, and my poor dad is just going to want to watch Kansas basketball, but is going to have to subject himself to this garbage.
Right. But I mean, it's just,
yeah.
You know, the scrambled eggs guys harped on the fact that they're going to turn Marquette over a lot, which is a scary proposition, especially away from home.
That's where I think the game will be decided, is how much can Marquette minimize that.
Right.
The Octagon of Doom will be rocking.
Just, it's going to be... I don't even know good wrestling puns to make here. Pat, help me out.
First, speaking of jokes, I would just like to point out that while their offense may be unappealing, they are currently on the sexiest losing streak alive.
Yeah, too.
Having lost to Brad Pitt over the last two games.
In reverse order, come on.
Yeah, you know, but you can't pass on the chance to do the Brad Pitt joke. I remember that being a thing when I was 12. That one time when those two
scrambled eggs already beat you to it, so we should have recorded last night.
Oh, of course they did. No, it's good. It's pretty obvious.
Yeah, so they lost at or on a neutral court to the Fighting Brian Wardles of Bradley. I pronounced his last name right. Okay, good. You know, they lost by 13 to Bradley on a neutral court. They lost by, 4 to Pittsburgh on a neutral court. And Pittsburgh's not exactly supposed to set the world on fire this year. Their best win is...
to Nichols State.
Yeah. The best win for Kansas State this year is an overtime win at UNLV. That's it. That's the list.
And this is not your father's UNLV team.
Yeah, this is not 1991. I can't look at this game and not go, we have to beat the crap out of them, or at least win convincingly, you know?
K-State makes 61% of their free throws.
Yeah, it's nothing. And I'm checking really quick. Yeah, Pitt is probably the best defense they've played at 63rd in the country. Marquette's defense is the 36th best defense in the country right now.
It's looking real bad, folks.
Yeah, I cannot emphasize enough that, if we lose at Kansas State, I have serious questions about this team.
So and if you cancel your Saturday plans to watch this game, I have serious questions about your social life.
Yeah, I'm going to have it on in the background while I do other things, and hope to God I don't hear, well, Marquette's down late in the game, so...
In a rousing finish, Kansas State wins 36-34.
Jesus. At that point, I might just be like, okay, can we cancel the rest of the year and just... Can we let fun teams play at that point?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Do we have any other big points on Kansas State here?
No. I mean, don't lose to Jacksonville on Wednesday. And
Hashtag don't lose to Jacksonville.
Great mascot, though, for Jacksonville, if you're unaware of it.
It's the Dolphins, isn't it?
Dolphins, yeah.
Dolphins, man.
Great mascot.
Nice little NFL mixed match.
Yeah, totally. But I just, in general... Oh, yeah, no, I see what you did there. Yeah, good point. But also, I just think it's a sweet mascot. Do you want to laugh at Georgetown for 2 minutes? I don't know. We shouldn't probably laugh too hard.
I'm commiserating with Georgetown right now, but at the same time, so for those who don't know, I'll lead us into this.
Go ahead.
As of about an hour and a half, 45 minutes
before we started taping.
Yeah. Georgetown lost both James Akinjo and Josh LeBlanc from the team. Now, some sources are saying they are transferring. Other sources are just... The official statement was just that they are no longer on the team and will not be playing anymore this year. I will not address any speculation or rumors, but losing your starting point guard and one of your few elite offensive players, and then losing a super talented sophomore who had made huge strides as a freshman and was poised to be their starter... at the three or the four, and Josh LeBlanc is also not good. To do it in one go, even worse. You know, you can talk about the wording and say it's not a transfer. It's, you know, some other issue going on, without addressing speculation. But Georgetown lost two elite offensive and 1.5 very good defenders for the rest of the year, in a year where they were supposed to take the next step. And that's a big ol' yikes.
Man, I can't imagine that happening to a team.
To be fair, we lost like one defender.
1.05
defenders.
At least Joey was tall.
Right. But, you know, that's sort of it in the Big East news.
Yeah. Well, Providence still sucks.
Well, can we replace
Providence? Not really news.
Can we switch Providence for Dayton, please?
Ooh. Oh yeah, how's it?
Friendship with Providence is
over. How's Andy not getting like his mentions blown up with people saying, "Why couldn't we have taken Dayton in the Big East?"
Yeah,
that would happen.
I would rather have Dayton in Connecticut.
Same.
Wow, that's a take.
Not close.
Give me Obi Toppin.
Well, we won't have him after this year, regardless. So
you're right.
No, but yeah, Providence looks real bad. They are currently 5-4. With losses to Northwestern, Penn, Long Beach State, and Charleston. And a 3-point win over Pepperdine to salvage whatever tournament they played in out in Anaheim.
Shout out Lorenzo Romar.
Yeah. Shout out Lorenzo Romar. Go Waves. But yeah, like the best win they have this year is St. Peter's at home? No. I guess it's
St.
technically
the fighting peacocks.
I guess technically the best win they have this year is that
great
Pepperdine
Katy Perry
win.
Song, by the way.
I mean, Northwestern yeah, notoriously lost to Merrimack. Like, you can't lose to Northwestern.
Yeah.
Even though Providence did beat up on Merrimack a couple days later.
I think the point we're trying to get at is DePaul is the best team in the Big East.
I mean, DePaul is currently projected to go 8-10 in conference, which is wild.
Yeah, it's true. It's funny because everyone's talking about like ranking them, but like even if they did finish 8-10, it would be just like such a wild improvement for them that like all this talk about like, oh, they're 8-0. It's like, well, if they go 500 and make the NIT, that's probably a big deal anyway.
Right. I'm still one of my favorite articles to write every year is I try to do one of the DePaul previews, and I just get to unload on how much I hate how worthless they are. That's all.
That's well, I mean, you know, I'm looking at the Big East standings right now. Shout out to Creighton for getting a win over Texas Tech, but granted, Texas Tech looks lost right now.
Yeah, what's up with Chris Beard?
I just don't think the talent's there yet.
Oh yeah, I mean, I think that's pretty explainable. I mean, yeah. They lost a lot of talent, and that team was so cohesive that, you know, they struggled to score when Culver wasn't playing really well, and now that Culver isn't there, I mean, I don't think it's surprising at all.
They still got Davide.
I mean, okay,
I know
that dude's like really one dimensional.
My thought is, if you have one European on your team, then you're probably like really good, and I can just assume that. I don't know. It's a very poor correlation that I make, but it's one that I do every single March when I'm filling out my bracket.
That's the insight into Ben's brain, everyone.
That's a scary thought.
I said I'm just glancing around the Big East really quick. Seton Hall lost to Oregon, and then came back and won two games in Atlantis.
Remember when the most predictable comeback happened when Oregon was down like what 19?
Oh, yeah. That was so sad.
You just hate to see it.
World's saddest world's smallest violin in my hands right now.
Yeah, extremely 1-800 contacts voice. My brand for Seton Hall.
Wow, nice. Look at the throwback from Pat.
That's why I love that reference. Anyway.
I mean, yeah, Nova still hasn't convinced me in a win yet in terms of, like, they've won every game they should have, and then, like, they got whomped by Ohio State and then lost to Baylor. So, you know, Nova hasn't done anything to, like, tell me that they're going to be really good yet. Shout out to Butler, undefeated. don't really have a huge marquee win. They, you know, they Missouri in Kansas City.
They swamped Missouri, yeah. And that was like a, that was a legit like home crowd too.
Yeah,
like and then, that should not be considered a neutral game
because it's considered semi away according to KenPom.
Yeah, Mizzou had to drive like 2 hours, and every single Mizzou grad lives in Kansas City or St. Louis.
Right. So shout out to Kamora Baldwin, who everybody wrote off, who went absolutely nuclear in that game. At the end of it,
yeah, where he was great. Onions
took over. Yeah. Or not in the Missouri game. So the next game they played was Stanford. Also in was Stanford, and Kamar Baldwin won it on a last second jumper.
That was nice.
They go to Ole Miss on Tuesday, and then actually host Florida on Saturday.
Ole Piss now, as it's officially called.
Topical.
Good one.
But so yeah, Butler has Ole Miss away, Florida at home, and Baylor away as its next three games. So we'll see. You know, Butler finally, they're number, 24 in the nation, according to the AP poll now. So we'll see how legit they look after the next run of three. That'll be very interesting. St. John's hasn't done anything of note yet. Xavier just lost to Florida in its tournament. That's the only loss they have, though. The offense for Xavier at times has looked very unconvincing.
Giannis just dunked all over Julius Randle.
I hate to see that.
Oh my God, it's beautiful. I don't know. I think the Big East, a defining factor of it and something that will be true again this year is we will learn a lot about it over the course of time that we don't really know coming in exactly what it is. And it'll shake itself out. I think it'll shake itself out a lot more evenly this year than in years past. But I'm still definitely excited for it.
Right.
And should we wrap there?
Well, I mean, you know, the only thing that worries me about how the Big East has played so far is that it's going to be a bloodbath in conference because the teams all, or at least like the top six, all seem like they can beat each other on any given day. I'm going to reserve judgment on DePaul and Creighton, maybe. I think that there's a clear bottom now with Providence, Georgetown, and St. John's. But that's kind of bad for the Big East in that there's not going to be really, like, a team that goes 2-16. I just blanked on my math. There's not a team that's going to be, like, 2-16 in conference, you know? Or 3-7, or 3-15. Like, there's not going to be somebody that everybody can beat up on and get some easy wins. And so, you know, it's going to come down to, like, if the standings are, like, Villanova, Hull, Butler, Marquette, Xavier, like, with DePaul and Creighton sort of, like, right behind them, the Big East might get less teams because of how bloodthirsty the conference is into the tournament. Especially because we really haven't played super well in the out-of-conference. So that's kind of worrisome. I really hope that, you know, the bottom three really do tank hard and let the top seven sort of get their wins. So we can hopefully see, you know, six teams in instead of four.
Yeah, I think the best-case scenario, regardless, is something that incentivizes Marquette and, you know, leads to quality wins within the conference just as a setup, as a factor, the setup of the conference. And I think we're going to get that this year, so I'm looking forward to it. Right. Anything else?
How was everyone's Thanksgiving?
I spent it in Milwaukee.
Thanksgiving was great. I had great food. I had leftovers for lunch at work today. It was awesome.
Oh, you got to love
it's like
that.
The best part about Thanksgiving.
I got a whole pan of sweet potatoes left over.
Oh yeah,
I'm just gonna mow them down after this chicken.
I had the very traditional Thanksgiving meal of chips and salsa and a frozen pizza.
Oh God, I didn't even think about
that. Yeah,
you didn't go home. That sucks.
I did not.
Well, I need to go watch Rashad Penny run all over some folks because Chris Carson got a nasty looking concussion. So, he's back in. Never mind.
love the NFL. That dude just got a horrible concussion. Oh, wait, no, he's back in. Good.
Yeah, at any rate, well, that's a good note to end this on, I would say.
More like Seattle. C sucks.
Hey. Kansas City, debatably co-opting Native American mascots.
It's
not very debatable.
It was named Chiefs after the mayor. The mayor was called like the chief of Kansas City, he had no notable Native American heritage.
You play totally in Arrowhead Stadium.
Why it's called Arrowhead Stadium.
We're waiting for that Arrowhead Water sponsorship.
There you go. Yeah, trying to cash in. We're
trying very hard.
Sweet water influencers. All right,
Ben, Kansas City Chiefs apologist.
Yeah, we'll be back next week with some great Rock Fight Kansas State takes. How about that?
Hopefully, Hell it's yeah. all.